Good evening and welcome to this meeting of Rydale District Council's Planning Committee. We're not expecting a fire alarm tonight, so if it does sound, it is for real. Please leave the building by the rear doors or the door to my right and congregate in the top car park. Ladies and gents' toilets are in the corridor along with drinking water. Please can you ensure your mobile phones are switched off or on silent. We do have a number of speakers this evening. Each speaker will have 3 minutes and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. Do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Moving on to the agenda. Agenda item 1, apologies for absence. Have we received any apologies?
Apologies have been received from Councillor Paul Andrews. Councillor Burr will substitute.
Thank you. Agenda item 2, declarations of interest. Are there any declarations? Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Item 11, I've been contacted by the agent of the Duncan Park Estate. It's personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary.
Thank you. Councillor Goodrick.
Yes, Chair, I'm not sure whether this is appropriate or not, but item agenda 12. I feel I should declare I am a member of the North Yorkshire County Council, and therefore probably in support of the joint minerals and waste policy, so I'm not how sure, but I'll just put that out there.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Potter.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Item 6 I've been lobbied on, which is non-pecuniary, non-prejudicial.
Thank you. Councillor Burr. Sorry, could you just put your microphone on?
Thank you, Chairman. Just to make you aware that I am a county councillor. My ward is Nunnington. I did used to eat in the pub, but I do believe that it's personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary, so I will be voting and taking part.
Thank you. Councillor Shales.
Thank you. Item number 7, not personal, not prejudicial or pecuniary.
Thank you. Could you just pop your microphone down a little bit for next time? Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. Item number 6, I've had a letter through the post. It's so that's my interest. It's non-pecuniary, non-personal or anything. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hull.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Likewise, I have a letter through the post. Okay. Non-prejudicial. Thank you.
On item 6.
Item 6, sorry.
Lovely. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 3, minutes of the meeting held on the 29th of August 2018. Do you agree that these are a correct record?
Yeah.
Thank you. I will move those minutes. Do I have a seconder, Mr. Shales?
Yeah, I'll move them.
Okay, I'll put those to the vote. Those have been approved. Agenda item 4 is urgent business, and I have no urgent business. Agenda item 5 is the schedule of items to be determined by committee. So therefore we'll move on to agenda item 6, which is application at Royal Oak Church Street, Nunnington. Hand over to Gary.
We've got a bit of feedback there, Chip. We'll carry on. Thank you, Chairman. Obviously, this was an item that was reported to the last meeting of the Planning Committee, and the item was deferred at that meeting to enable members the opportunity to carry out a site inspection, which happened about a fortnight ago, Chairman. And that was carried out by the case officer, and I think in attendance there were 6 members of the committee plus the local member, Councillor Val Arnold. And in addition, there were also some local residents, Mr. Rook, Mr. Foxton, and Mr. Cook, and the applicant and her daughter. So I think there was a fair attendance on the day. So bearing in mind there were 6 members of the Planning Committee, I'll keep the presentation brief, Chairman. For those members who weren't at the site visit, and just to again give you some visuals of the property, These are some photographs of the interior of the premises, the kitchen area, and also another part of the kitchen area. These are all interiors of the building, Chairman, that would be currently is part authorised public house, part residential property. And as you can see, some of these parts are with the existing, or what was the bar area. The pub has been closed since January this year, so obviously that's not something that is within planning control. It's the application for the material change of use, which is what we're here to consider tonight. And obviously, as you can see there, the bar area. So just panning round. This is the site plan that shows. This is the adjacent highway. This is the main run of buildings, which is the in an L shape with the sort of what's described here as restaurant and bars parallel with the main road. As you can appreciate, the road that it's on is it sort of goes downhill south to north. So in the front steps, you actually step up to the door. If you're coming in through the car park area, you're coming through with this entrance here and park in that area there and coming through the back of the building, I guess is how most people would access the building. The main kitchen is in this area here, and the residential accommodation is essentially on first floor. So hopefully that gives you the idea. So looking at this is the view of the rear of the premises. So you're coming in via the vehicular access there into the parking area. The main two-storey element of the building here and the single-storey outshot at the back. There is also another range of buildings that's out of sight here, which runs further to the rear of the premises. And this is just to give you an idea of the extent of the accommodation, Chairman. As I say, I think we've got three speakers tonight, so I'll be brief. You have a report on the agenda papers, Chairman, and really this all hinges around the application of policy SP11 of the Council's adopted Rydale Plan local plan strategy relating to community facilities. And that policy is in two elements, but there is an element of that policy which relates to protection of community facilities, which is starting from the premise of seeking to retain those facilities that contribute to the quality of life in the district and help support sustainable communities. In part, it talks about provision of community facilities, because obviously that some development does do that. But then the second part of the policy relates to protection of existing facilities. And I think it's worth reading from that. And on page 17 of the agenda papers, paragraph 6.3, amplifies how the policy SP11 in the plan is required to be applied in terms of protection of facilities. And it goes on to say that existing local retail, community, cultural, leisure and recreational services and facilities, and the policy, the preamble to the policy includes pubs in those that list, that contribute to the vitality of the towns and villages and well-being of local communities will be protected from loss/redevelopment. But the important words here are unless it can be demonstrated that, and there are three bullet points. There is no longer a need for the facility, or suitable and accessible alternatives exist, or that it is no longer economically viable to provide the facility, or proposals involving replacement facilities provide an equivalent or greater benefit to the community and can be delivered with minimum disruption to services. The key words really in that policy are the words or, Chairman. The bullet points aren't all required to be complied with. It's any of them. And as part of this process, in considering the application, because we're dealing with a particular type of application, they're very often contentious. We're dealing with specialised areas of valuation, Chairman, and assessment of business. You will see from the agenda reports that we have commissioned a report from a company called Florets, who are an acknowledged company in that area of work, in fact acknowledged by organisations such as CAMRA. What we've had back, Chairman, is a very detailed report, but the cutting to the chase, Florets have concluded that they don't think there is a viable business. And so that inevitably has led to the recommendation of approval, Chairman. It's with a heavy heart that we make these recommendations. None of us wish to see a facility lost, but we have to give you a professional recommendation, and that's what you have before you tonight. Wouldn't have been ever been able to forget that. The local member sent me an email. She can't be here tonight and did ask me to read this out. Thank you, Chairman. And this is an email from Councillor Val Arnold, which was received on the 23rd of September, titled The Royal Oak and Nunnington. As I'm on holiday in France, I'm unable to attend the planning meeting on the 25th of September. Would you therefore be kind enough to either ask Gary or the Chairman if they could read out the following statement on my behalf as ward member? I think this is a very difficult application. On the one hand, much of the information supplied in the report states that the Royal Oak is no longer viable for various reasons. This may be the reason why the applicant understandably wishes to change to the change of use. But if I may draw your attention to paragraph 4, 5, 8 to 10 of the economic viability report, which states that this property has been marketed well over its value. I don't think that is in dispute, Chairman. Nunnington is one of the charming villages we have in Rydale, but like other villages, it no longer has a shop, post office and no regular public transport links. The Village Hall, Nunnington Hall and Frighton Catering Tea Shop, while excellent businesses, do not open in the evenings, also in the winter period. The Royal Oak is at the heart of the village and was open all year round, serving the community, also the many holiday makers while staying in holiday cottages and B&Bs in the village, who with the closure are now unable to walk to the Royal Oak to get an evening meal. And Nunnington, like many other rural villages, relies on tourism for generation of the local economy. Other public houses in the surrounding rural villages are at present thriving. And I'm sure in the future, if marketed at a realistic price, the Royal Oak could also be again be viable. If the property is made into a private dwelling, it will deprive the community of a well-loved asset at the heart of the community. Unfortunately, I do not agree with the recommendation of approval, as the property has been marketed at an inflated price and should be marketed at a public house as a public house at a realistic market value for a reasonable period of time before considering a change of use. Thank you very much. So thank you, Chair.
We'll now move on to the speakers, and first we have on behalf of the parish Mr. Richard Murray Wells. Yes, please, if you'd like to take a seat there. And the button in the middle, fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak as a representative of Nunnington Parish Council regarding the application for change of use. We received such a volume of communication about this closure that we had two public meetings and allowed people to have their say. The meetings were at times lively and impassioned, but I recall every person who spoke wanted the pub to continue. The conclusion was that the parish council would object to the application and would seek to register the Royal Oak as an asset of community value, and it's unfortunate that application isn't determined at this time. I think everyone understands it's difficult to run a pub. The Royal Oak faces strong competition in a popular area. The applicants, the former landlords, were kind enough to meet me at the start of this process, and I'm grateful for their time and wish them well. But the parish council's been making the same point since this application was submitted. This property was not marketed at a realistic guide price. The pub's turnover's fallen in recent years. I'm referring now to the report you commissioned. Turnover was £275,000 a year in 2007. That's £360,000 today, adjusting for inflation. When it was bought by the current owners, it was £231,000 a year, and we're informed it's now down to £160,000 a year. This at a time when neighbouring pubs have enjoyed significant success. The Royal Oak, for whatever reason, has dropped well behind its competitors to a point where Florets now consider it unviable. The report bases it on pretty much the current turnover rather than what was achieved in the past. However, neighbouring pubs in this popular area have shown again and again that their turnover and hence viability can be transformed with the right management. And one only needs to look at the success of the Grapes in Slingsby, the neighbouring village, to see what can be achieved. Going back to the price, the Royal Oak was marketed at £650,000. It was reduced, it was cut back to £600,000. But Florets, in their report, estimate its real value at £325,000. The evidence from the land registry shows the applicant purchased the property for £360,000. I understand another £40,000 or thereabouts was spent on fixtures and fittings, but I think they've largely been sold now. I'm happy to be corrected if I'm wrong on that. I spent some time in the pub trade, and they used to say a pub was worth twice its turnover. It was a rule of thumb. If that held true, it would be worth £320,000 today.
Left.
Thank you. So in light of this, I think that's an extraordinary price. I'm actually aware of people who would buy the Royal Oak of £325,000. I spoke to someone today to assess their level of interest, and they confirmed they would proceed and have heads of terms agreed within days if it would be sold at that level. They didn't know where to put the offer in, and I couldn't help them because this property isn't on the market. There's no opportunity at the moment for anyone to say they're bidding for it. So in normal circumstances, I'd be delighted if the applicants were able to do well out of the Royal Oak, but in this case, their gain will deprive Nunnington of its only pub. And it's happening not because there's no one out there, but because they want more for that than they bought it for. And I urge you to let Nunnington keep its pub. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move on to objector, Miss Helen Cook. Just the button in the middle, yeah.
Hi, I'm a fourth generation villager. I worked at the Royal Oak for 25 years as chef, and I left in 2010. During my time there, we would serve 30-40 lunches, 40 to 50 evening meals, and on weekends we could double that amount. Initially we worked 7 days a week, and until the owners felt they'd established a reputation and they just closed on a Monday. At the time, Nunnington Studios and Nunnington Hall both had cafes open during the day, and there was no significant bus service in the village. We relied on consistently good food, quality service, and word of mouth from customers, tourists, walkers, and people staying in holiday cottages. Personally, I wouldn't rent a cottage in a village without a pub. So to me, losing the village pub could affect the village economy. Yeah, the local plan says it wants to retain the village's own identities and characters. Well, the pub is part of that character. The local plan also says that it wants to retain jobs, skills, and rural prosperity, and to support working and living in Rydale. So to lose the pub, you're losing sort of skilled work like chefs, or even just students wanting seasonal work. Other small businesses suffer, like the veg suppliers, butchers, other suppliers. And this year will be the first time in over 40 years that Newington Pub won't have held the over 60s Christmas lunch the Village Hall Committee organises. We've lost our shop, our post office. All we've got left is the pub to give us a sense of community. The viability study suggests that the pub didn't sell because it was marketed at an overinflated price. And I believe that if it was marketed at a realistic price, it would sell. But now the kitchen equipment's been sold, some tables and chairs are sold, even the premises license has been allowed to lapse. These all sort of make it less viable or less attractive to a buyer. And even some of the villagers offered to pay to renew the premises license. They still let it lapse. It makes me feel that they never intended to sell the premises as a pub. And I would just like to ask the committee if it would at least defer the decision so that the pub could be marketed at its true value and any potential buyer had a chance to buy it with the letting accommodation that they have...
30 seconds left.
Thank you. ...that they have had planning permission for in the outbuildings. Thank you.
Thank you. And now, speaking on behalf of the applicant, we have Abigail Greatham.
It's already on.
Okay. So, Chairman, committee members,
I hope that we were able to answer all your questions on the site meeting on the 12th of September. And together with the non-viability report, you are able to understand our reasons for having to close at the end of last year. We bought the pub in 2014, and it was a risk as the previous owners had been trying to sell for 4 years and were not making a profit. We were willing to try, as in the deeds it stated that the property could be a pub, a beer or wine shop, or a private dwelling. We thought then that if we could not make a success of it, at least we could revert to a private dwelling. It did not have a local needs occupancy condition imposed, and we are still living in the same space in the property. Our first year of accounts showed a substantial loss, therefore we put it on the market, knowing we might also have to wait 4 years, by which time there would be no further funds to continue to support the business. It has been on the market for over 3 years with no offers at any price. There is mention of an ACV nomination, but Mr. Housden assures us that it is important not to confuse the two processes. The ACV will be assessed in the usual manner, and our application today is being determined, irrespective of the property's proposed status in relation to an ACV. Therefore, this will not detract the committee from being able to make a decision today. However, for avoidance of doubt, we have challenged the nomination, requested through the Parish Council, and Mr. Housden will confirm that it was received before the 7th of June, and there were 8 weeks in which to make a judgment. The nomination was not mentioned at the planning meeting on the 29th of August, and by then it was well out of time for judgment. Even if it was in time, it should not be successful, as the reasons for listing it do not comply with the relevant regulations. I accept you are not here to make a determination on the ACV, but I wish to make it clear that our legal advisers have submitted representations confirming that the nomination should fail. We hope you'll be able to assess for yourself the size and value of the property and the difficulties encountered in the physical running of the business and equally living in a pub as a home, as we are not confined to upstairs without a kitchen or dining room. Florets has independently assessed the business, and its conclusion was that it's not viable, either in its previous trading model or as an alternative. The officers have found that our application complies with your development plan policies, and we therefore urge the committee to grant us a change of use. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Sorry, could you just turn the microphone off for me? That was really kind. Thank you very much.
Just a couple of things to come back on, Chairman, and to draw members' attention to the letter from Freith, which is on the late pages, and just is the first letter on the late pages. It's about a 3.5-page letter, but also with it is a lot of documentation, and sadly that's been repeated, so you've got two lots of the same documentation, for which I can only apologise, Chairman. But the essence of the Freith letter is in relation to the what is still a current asset of community value nomination, but it's a separate process. And I think to some extent it's a, I hesitate to use the word a red herring, but actually our policy SP11 relating to community facilities in villages starts from the premise that community facilities ideally should be kept. So you know, whether it's a community asset value listed or not is not even mentioned in policy, in the adopted policy, which is the adopted policy from SP13. And we have received that letter, and that is being considered by myself and the council solicitor, which we received last Friday. So in essence, we got it yesterday. But in terms of the application of policy, Chairman, which is the start point for consideration of all of these applications, all of the applications that we deal with tonight, we start with the development plan. You're legally required to start with the development plan. And so returning to paragraph 6.3 on page 17, SP11, which is probably the key policy here, although the last speaker did mention local needs occupancy, Chairman, which I'll also come on to in a moment. The application of policy SP11 in relation to retention of existing community facilities sets out the adopted development plan position. So when you actually then revert to the rest of the officer report, it does go through all of those issues, and it does tackle the issue of the sale price, Chairman, which I don't think is in any dispute with Florets, who considered that the sale price was overinflated. But Florets have gone on, nevertheless, to actually consider the economic viability of the business. And their conclusion is that there is not a viable business here. And so armed with that response, the applicant only has to satisfy that one criteria, and that's the difficulty we have, Chairman, because that's the adopted development plan and our only professional expert advice on the matter is as set out in the report from Florets. Now, we might all have an opinion, but there's no other professional opinion in the room. And that's the problem that we deal with. So the evidence before you is, from Florets, is that there is not a business here, or not a viable business. And that, in terms of officer recommendation, gives us little, if any, wriggle room in terms of how we apply or interpret that policy. So it's with a heavy heart we make these recommendations, and this recommendation is one that falls well and truly into that category. Just moving on to the recommendation, which obviously is one of approval, you'll see that the recommendation also is recommending that in terms of approving the residential use of the building, which at the moment, although it's predominantly pub on ground floor, it's not all exclusively pub on ground floor. So the residential accommodation, which is on first floor, has its kitchen accommodation on ground. There's an intermingling there. The officer report has suggested that we should treat this in a similar way that we would do any other new dwelling in a village, in another village or in open countryside, was that in approving it, it should be subject to a local needs occupancy condition. Now, clearly the existing accommodation isn't, but the existing accommodation is a mixed entity. So in becoming a dwelling, we're suggesting and recommending to you that if members are minded to take that recommendation, that they should apply this occupancy condition. Now, the last speaker seemed to be implying that she wasn't necessarily happy with that, but that's the recommendation, Chairman, is that we should be applying that condition because that's how we would normally apply policies SP1 and 2 and SP21, Chairman, relating to a new dwelling in such a location in the district. So that's really, really all I wanted to say in relation to what's come out from the speakers, Chairman. Well, the community asset, Chairman, is a separate process. You've got to make a planning decision tonight. And clearly, the response that we've got is the response that we've got. It's not unusual to get an adverse response from the owner of a potential nominated asset that they would object to the nomination. That will be treated through that nomination process. But I would remind members that the asset of community value process was derived from the Localism Act in 2011. And really, the essence of that process is to, if listed, give the nominating entity, in this case the parish council, sometimes it's a community group, it can differ, the opportunity to bid for the property if it comes up for sale. And then there are some moratorium periods, either 6 weeks or 6 months, dependent on how that happens. But there is no right to buy. So the whole issue of community assets localism has raised expectations which have singularly failed to be delivered since that legislation came in. That's a side issue to making a decision under the Planning Act. There was one other point, actually, Chairman, which was the suggestion of a deferral of a decision to allow for a marketing period. That clearly isn't before us tonight. It's not the intention of the application. And ultimately, we do have a duty to determine planning applications, so we're going to have to make a decision. We've had this application since April, and we do need to make a decision.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Any questions? Lovely. I just have one, Gary, that I maybe didn't pick up on, and forgive me for not asking you earlier, that she's been brought up tonight. Is the property currently on the market?
Not as far as I'm aware at the current time. I'm looking at the... I think the answer is no.
Thank you. No further questions, so we shall move into debate. Councillor Windrush, would you like to take this one as...
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, it was my patch before I moved to the Elmsley ward. Like the speakers have said, there is no shop and no post office in the village, and the pub, unfortunately, is not on the main road through Nunnington. I do not agree with the report that the pub is not viable. I think if it was advertised at a realistic price and in the right ownership, I think that any pub can be profitable. So I will not be supporting this application. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Shales.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Can you hear me all right? I want to compare this to an identical situation happened about, I suppose, now 3 to 4 years ago in the village of Berrythorpe, which is not far from where I live, 2 or 3 miles as the crow flies, I suppose. And the pub, the Bay Horse, closed down. And the village went to every possible end they could to try and keep it. It was advertised on boards all around the whole of the village, many other villages far ahead. And when I talked to them, we discovered that they had a developer who wanted to turn the pub into more housing in the village. The villagers were adamant they wanted to keep the pub. Berrythorpe is a bit like Nunnington. It has no shop now. There isn't another pub. It doesn't have a school, and it doesn't have a post office. Sounds a bit like Westow, except we do have a pub in Westow. For 2 whole years, they struggled against this. And in the end, a couple came from the East Riding who already have a hotel and a very good restaurant there, and they came and bought it. It took time and a lot of patience, but a lot of determination on the people of Berrythorpe, but they succeeded. And I think pubs are terribly important in villages. We're losing practically all the kind of things that go on outside the village itself. Most of them are in fairly remote places. Berrythorpe is off the beaten track in a way. You've got to go out and uphill to it. But it can be done. And frankly, with that, the hard work that went into the keeping of the Berrythorpe pub, I really don't feel I could support the proposal before us tonight. Because, in fact, it seems to me there are other points which didn't actually affect Berrythorpe, but which are in common with that village. And therefore, I'm not going to support the application. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I didn't visit the site visit because I do know this pub and its area incredibly well. When I did live in that area, it was the main eating place for the area. And there's no doubt that everybody knows that it's very, very challenging to run businesses in our villages. However, going back to when I actually used to visit the pub, we used to queue at 5 o'clock to get in for a meal. It was always vibrant. It was always busy. It had a good reputation. And it was good for the residents of the village. And I think that we've got to realise that a pub is only successful or unsuccessful because of the people who are running it. And we've got an awful lot of successful pubs being run by successful people in many of our villages. As Councillor Shields has said, a pub in that area is very vibrant now and is thriving. So we've got the dilemma here that we've got a pub wants to turn into a house. And it seems to me that the planning has got a little bit muddled in that probably what is the best option? Should it be sold as a pub? Would we get more money for a pub? Or would we get more money for a house? And with a beautiful village like Nunnington, there is only one reason, and it has to be for a house, because that is where the money is. However, we've got various people saying various things. We've got some who support, some who object, and as we've been told tonight, we've had 2 public meetings. I think as a planning committee, we've got to think about the bigger picture here, and we've actually got to think about, what do we really want in Rydale? How do we want Rydale to survive? And how do we want our residents to live
work and have recreational time. How do we as councillors make that fit? And of course we would want a community centre. However, we are being told on the other hand that it is not in our gift really to promote community centres. So let's go back to the report, and 5.7 of the report states quite categorically that it has not been marketed at a realistic guide price. As we've seen on the pictures, the interior is a shadow of its former self, and it's, as I believe, it's on the market at an inflated price. I think that what we've got to do is, there's two strands to the report. We either believe that it's not viable, which I think each and every one of you around this table knows about a village pub that is successful, or we've got to say it was marketed at an inflated price. I personally feel, and I understand it's a dilemma, but I personally feel that it has been over-marketed at an inflated price, and I do think that if it was on the market for a realistic price, it would have been snapped up, and someone would have bought it and would have made a successful business of it. So the report in itself to us councillors is contradictory in its own report. I think that the village needs a pub. I think it should have a pub. And I do honestly think, and this is my, I probably will get no support for it, but I do believe that we should say that this should not go through. Unfortunately, I hate not going with officers. I would like to move refusal. And I would say that the reason why is because it has been inflated. It hasn't been given a proper chance. And the report, councillors, backs that up. And I think it should be kept as a community asset. And we should take it to appeal, and if the applicant wants to, we should defend it at that. So the reasons for refusal are is that it's not been marketed at a realistic price. It's been devalued as the property has been stripped out, and it is valued as a community asset. And that's my reasons for going against the officers and my reasons that I want to put forward. Thank you. And I don't know if I've got a seconder.
Thank you,
Councillor
Burt. I've got Councillor Potter next.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I've found this to be one of the most difficult decisions I've come across so far, due to having to balance one side against the other. I'm very mindful of this Fleurette's study that declares this pub not to be viable. I'm also aware of the personal problems for the people who own the place. On the other hand, I very much agree with just about everything that Councillor Burr said and other things that were said prior to that. I was rather concerned to hear the stories about no food was being served on a Sunday or bank holidays and similar things, when considering that they've got a massive advantage of having Nunnington Hall just down the road, and therefore some very interesting footfall, particularly on the weekend. And very much what Councillor Burr said again, viability. I look at thriving pubs elsewhere that I visit and think, yeah, this is down to how they're run and the commitment. And I find it very difficult to understand why you can't make a go of a pub that has certain advantages. And having listened to several people from within the community speak about the quite passionately about how I would hope they will support a pub like that sufficiently to keep it viable. But at what price? And again, it comes back to this fact that if this pub was bought for whether it be £360 or £400, it was previously viable. The property was bought as a pub, not as a house. And there's a big difference there. If you're selling this as a house, quite clearly the valuation would be completely different, but it was bought as a pub, and therefore the valuation should be as a pub. And I find it unethical, to say the least, that if you could buy a pub for whether it be £360 or £400 in 2014, you could be considering trying to sell it for £600 or £650 currently within 4 years, when really the housing market hasn't increased by a great deal. And we're talking about a 50% profit just by saying it's no longer a pub, it is now a house. So I'm afraid on balance that I see the way that pubs are run as being absolutely critical. If they've got the support of the village, which I would very much hope they have, and it would appear from what people have said that they have, and community is just so important. And when, if we're considering taking away one of the last community facilities for this village, then in a sense you're destroying that, or helping to destroy that community, and I'm afraid I can't support this either. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. In fact, I don't wish to repeat anything that's already been said, so I will just echo what's been said by my friends over the way. I had, in fact, raised my hand to second Councillor Bird's proposal, but I think Councillor Shields has already done it. Yes.
Thank you. Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, we've been here before, and it's another Low Marishes, I'm afraid. And we tried very hard as a council to save the pub at Low Marishes, and we didn't succeed. And I've said it then, and I'll say it now, the success of a pub relies on the people who are running it. And if you don't run it well, it won't succeed. And you've only got to look at the pubs that have succeeded, that were doing very badly, like the Bay Horse at Burythorpe has now had a new lease of life. The pub, the Crown and Cushion at Welburn, has had a new lease of life. The Half Moon at Acklam ran itself down into the ground with new landlord and landlady. They've been retained back in by the owner, and they've given it a new lease of life, and it's succeeding again. So pubs live and prosper by the people that run them. And frankly, to market a pub at 600,000 when it hasn't done succeeded, then I'm sorry, you're never going to sell a pub that's worth 300,000 for 600,000, and that's the sadness of it. However, I am mindful that this is another Low Marishes, and we didn't succeed on that one. And very, very reluctantly, and it is with a real heavy heart, I will have to go with the officers, otherwise this will end up going to appeal.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak on the application? I'd like to take... Oh, sorry. Councillor Maud.
Well, I would just like to say this. We have two pubs in our village, and one of them closed last October. And it was after a series of... It had been in private ownership, and then about 6 years ago, when the landlord, 15 years, retired, he put it on the market, and it was very quickly bought by one of these pub chain things, you know, and so people were moving in and full of enthusiasm to make a go of it. But, you know, they were always saying that every time they made more, they were asked to pay more to the company that had bought the pub. And then eventually it was closed last October and remained empty. Everyone thought, well, that's it, you know, it's not going to be a go. But a chap who moved into the village about 8 years ago, him and his wife, they've bought it. They have holiday cottages, and he says, we want somewhere where we send our customers for a meal without going driving. And so he says, we'll make a go of this. And they have taken at least 12 skipfuls of stuff from the inside of the pub. The bar's gone, the toilets have gone. They'll be completely, I'm looking forward to seeing what it's like, but at the moment, they're being held by many as the local heroes. So I just feel that, you know, it's up to the people with enthusiasm and determination to make things work, and I can't support this recommendation from the officers either. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to take this opportunity to speak on this application also. I do find this a very difficult application, and I'd like to thank the applicants for allowing us the site visit. I do understand that was a reasonably traumatic experience for you. I appreciate that the applicant has decided that the pub trade is not bringing in the required income commensurate to the hours worked and has marketed the business on and off for the last 3 years. I've read the independent report very carefully and acknowledge a change in drinking habits, the economic situation and so on, but these are circumstances prior to the applicant purchasing the business in 2014. I do find it unusual, therefore, to see the business marketed as early as 2015 with an inflated price tag. When undertaking a site visit, it was unfortunate to see the commercial kitchen equipment was not in situ and that the ground floor had been turned into domestic living areas with a bar sitting proudly in the centre space. I also have sympathy for the local community and residents of Nunnington who have long had an appreciated public house within the village and feel frustrated at the loss of a community facility. It's not that long ago that the pub was a thriving business and indeed a destination of choice. It was classed as a good eatery where people would drive some distance to enjoy the food and a rural pub atmosphere. People parked considerately and all got a workout either before or after their meal depending on where they parked. I understand why the applicant has come to the decision they have. However, there are many businesses where returns are small but work is hard with long hours, and that is a personal choice. Going back to the independent report, some of the eateries mentioned nearby, in my opinion, are not in the same category as the Royal Oak for varying reasons. Personally, I really wish that the applicant had perhaps persevered and added to the experience with quiz nights and charity events, etc. However, we are where we are, and I understand how the outcome of the independent report has been reached. I acknowledge and accept why and how the applicant has applied for a change of use. I fully appreciate why the community is firmly of the opinion that they don't want to lose their public house, none of which is making it any easier to come to a decision. However, reluctantly, as chair of this planning committee, I am going to go against my officer's recommendation. And if you'll allow me, I'll add an additional reason for refusal, which would be that this application does not comply with policy SP11, as I believe the public house is a viable business that is contributing to the vitality of the village, a sense of community, employment and economic stability of the village. Thank you.
Just on a point of decision making, really, and I'll allude to what I mentioned earlier, is the start point for all your decision making is policy. Okay, and so I acknowledge what Councillor Burr, the issues that you'd made and about the marketing and the asking price and whether it should be a community asset, but actually the issue is here whether this complies with policy SP11. I think the Chairman has just mentioned SP11 in part, but clearly that's something we need to get back to in making the decision, is the start point of the development plan. Well, just referring members back to paragraph 6.3 on page 17 is the criteria against which we consider letting changes of use occur. And I think you, Chairman, are combing in on the second bullet point, which is that you believe that this is still an economically viable facility, and that in that sense it's not meeting the retention policy requirements of policy SP11.
Therefore, it has been moved and seconded for refusal. So I would like to put that to the vote, please. That application has been refused.
Chairman, at this point, somebody's still letting you. At this point, Chairman, I'm going to move that this matter is deferred by this planning committee under the council's constitution of the terms of reference of the planning committee. It's not often that I do this, but it's a power that is there under the planning committee terms of delegation, where the specialist service lead, which is me, would wish to take advice on that reason for refusal and whether we're able to successfully defend it at appeal and the implications for costs. So I think I've captured the reason for refusal. We now need to consider that at the next meeting, so I'm deferring this decision, Chairman.
Thank you. Can we have it put on record, please, because the applicant has left the room, that you make contact with them in the morning, please, to let them know that what the process.
What that in effect will mean, Chairman, is that having captured your reason for refusal, there will be an officer report on the reason for refusal and the implications of that reason, so that before issuing it, this committee makes that decision in full knowledge of its implications. It will come back to the next meeting, Chairman, but based around the issues of reasonableness based on your adopted development plan.
Thank you. We shall now move on to agenda item 7, which is application at land in OS Field 4480 Westfield Way, Norton.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll just wait for people to move around. I'll come up with the words for that. Thank you, Chairman. Parcel of land is a parcel of land that's been allocated for commercial development for some considerable period of time. I think it probably first appeared in the original 2002 version of the Rydell plan, but brought forward in the current plan, and essentially is the first parcel of land as you turn into Westfield Way on the left-hand side as you're heading down towards the Yorkshire Baker. If you know where that building is, it's a substantial building. So turning right at the traffic lights if you're coming out of town. In essence, the change, I suppose, in terms of circumstances since the grant of the earlier planning permissions has been the development of the Westfield Nursery site, which is on the opposite side of the Westfield Way, but actually accessed off Scarborough Road. So for those of you familiar with that, there are banks of trees really either side, and the residential properties to the west are actually behind that bank of trees. So I'll just show you a few photographs before coming back to the report. So this is a view from the southwestern corner of the site. So this is an entrance into some small industrial units on the western side of Westfield Way. Looking back up Westfield Way, the traffic lights are in the distance with Scarborough Road beyond the bend in the road. Little entrance way here, which is adjacent to a public right-of-way on the south side of the site. And the site is in this area here. So it's behind this sort of substantial hedge road frontage. And this wooded area here is what separates the newer dwellings from Westfield Way. It's quite a substantial tree belt. This is the only point at which you can see the nearest dwellings, which there's a public right-of-way, there's a footpath which comes in off Westfield Way, it comes into the southern corner of the site, but you're some way away from Westfield Way at this point. And this is on the Westfield Way as well. And you can see the level of screening that there is on the application site side, but also on this area next to the eastern side of Westfield Way. And this is further up that road. This is looking back in the opposite direction. So, in fact, there you just see, this is looking southwards along Westfield Way. So that's the corner of the Yorkshire Baker building. So if you carried along this road here, you go around a bit of an S-bend and towards the Bacon Factory. So that's where you are. This is the only point at which you see any of the dwellings on the Westfield Way development, which is right at the southern end of the site at a bit of a thin point in the existing hedgerow. By this time, the tree belt has petered out to a sort of hedgerow, and it's an end gable. And this is just a view further north looking back down the site. So the application site's behind this planted area. This is the footpath that goes to the north of the site. Look, a little bit of an unsurfaced footpath there. And this is the public right-of-way that runs to the southern part of the site. So again, you get a feel for how well screened it is. This is within the site. So again, this is the screening on the eastern side. And this is looking back towards the Yorkshire Baker on the eastern side of the site. And this is the screening which is to be retained. So hopefully that gives you a feel for where the site is. As I say, it's a long allocated site. The only issues really that have cropped up somewhat late in the process was initially a response of an objection from Natural England, which is detailed on page 120 of the late pages. But as you'll see in the ensuing pages, that objection reached a situation where they'd actually lifted their objection. They were concerned about the impact on the lack of a habitats regulation assessment, appropriate assessment, which has been done. Water bowl surveys have been done, and it culminated with a response of no objection from Natural England on page 132 of the late pages of the late pages. There was also a point relating to the hours of use recommended, which I think has subsequently been suggested be 7 till 7, which is the environment specialist is happy with. And I'm aware that the agent has registered to speak tonight, so I'm sure the agent will confirm their position on the amended hours limitation, Chairman. But I think the main thing is, Chairman, that this isn't proposing B2 general industrial use, and there are mitigations in place to protect amenities of residents which are relatively near to the site but not immediately adjacent to it.
Thank you. So I'll now invite the agent, Mr. Keogh. Is it Big Pan?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. We don't have a great deal to add to the positive recommendation contained in the officer's report, but just a few points. As has already been said, this is an application for employment development on a site that's allocated for employment use in the local plan. The site is part of a larger area of land to the east and south of Westfield Way, allocated for employment use in the 2002 local plan. Planning permission for a scheme very similar to the one before you was approved in 2009. Not great timing. We all know what happened to the economy in 2008 and in the years immediately following. The 2009 planning permission was renewed in 2014, but proposals had not come forward in time for that permission to be implemented. However, in recent years, market conditions have improved and demand for small industrial units has picked up, and hence the reason we've come back with the application. The other areas of land on Westfield Way that were allocated for employment have been developed out, most recently the area to the south of the application site that is now occupied by the Cranswick pastry factory. So this is the last remaining parcel of undeveloped land allocated for employment use in this part of Norton. The principle of employment development on the site is clearly well established, both by the previous planning permissions and the continued allocation of the site for employment purposes. The officer's report clearly explains how all of the technical issues raised by the proposed development have been addressed. All the consultees dealing with issues such as drainage, flood risk, and highways and transportation have been satisfied. Following submission, the scheme has been amended to remove one industrial unit so that a greater area of woodland is retained. The council's ecologist now has no objection to the scheme. Residents on the west side of Westfield Way have raised some concerns relating to noise, but our noise assessment has demonstrated that the type of units proposed will not result in any adverse impact on local residents. It is also the case that at the time that the permission was granted for the housing scheme, the developers and the council were aware of the planning permission for employment use on our site, and the housing scheme was deliberately designed so that any potential noise impact from our scheme was minimised. For example, some of the units, it was a requirement of the planning permission for the housing scheme that some of the units were designed gable end on to Westfield Way, both to mitigate noise from traffic on Westfield Way, but also any potential from the employment allocated employment site opposite.
30 seconds left.
Thank you. In addition, at the council's insistence, a 2-metre acoustic fence was put along the boundary of the housing site with Westfield Way. Your environmental health officer has recommended appropriate conditions which have been referred to and has no objections on that basis. Although other areas of employment land have come forward since this site was first allocated, those later allocations tend to cater for larger occupiers. Our scheme is aimed at smaller, generally more local occupiers. We feel it's important that a good range of employment sites are readily available so that the local economy can respond flexibly to changes in the wider national economic context. Thank you.
Thank you. Could you just turn the microphone off for me, please? Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Shields.
By the way, Madam Chairman, I should have voted. I voted against the original statement in the previous one. I was certainly seconding what Mrs. Burr had, so I was quite shocked to see it. I've done what one councillor did some years ago, but it was not that. It was, I was absolutely behind everybody else here. Thank you about that. Page 80, I think. I'm always concerned about trees, and in this, there's impact upon trees on that page. It says some of which will be lost due to the proposal. Do we actually have a number, or how many? Because in the one in which we had in Weaverthorpe, I was really quite appalled by the number of trees that were going to be taken down after they'd been specially put there earlier for the benefit of the residents in that particular road. So do we have anything on this?
I can't give you a number, Chairman, because they're like a continuation of almost like a thick hedgerow. They've grown up over the years. I'm looking at the agent, and we're both probably looking at the location plan. Obviously, there has to be an access into the site off the main road, so that results in loss at that point. But a lot of the planting is retained on frontage, in particular to the northern part of the site and also the eastern boundary. So from page 92, gives you a feel for what's proposed to be retained there. Most of what's proposed to be retained on the eastern boundary is sort of in the vicinity of the southern part of the site. But it does look as though on the northern part there might be some thinning of that planting on that boundary in that location. But obviously you're within the depths of the site at that particular point. And I think there's more planting behind it. There's more woodland behind the site, not within the site. I mean, as industrial estates go, I would suggest this one's probably got more retained planting than most of them would have. If you compare it to, well, Eden Camp's nothing to compare because we haven't got, any planting at Eden Camp, but that's all new planting. But in terms of historical industrial estates, we have very little, very few that have got banks of trees. But I would suggest that certainly the southern part of the site on frontage, we're keeping most of what's there. And at one point, it looks as though they're planting in the entrance point, the existing opening.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm assuming this is a speculative development, and on that basis, I would assume that the developers have a pretty good feel for the amount of demand for it. But do we actually have any indication of the level of demand for this sort of industrial unit?
No, difficult to quantify that precisely, but certainly if our economic development officer was here, he would be saying, or the person who's now the economic development specialist would be saying, well, actually, anecdotally, there's a need for smaller units, and this scheme is designed around smaller units, although it's actually there's less number than the original scheme. The original scheme never came forward because it was all at the wrong time. It hit in 2009, and obviously everything had fallen apart at that point. But anecdotally, these small light industrial units tend to be the ones that people are looking for, and they're not always been the ones that we've delivered on our industrial estates. So may well be more attractive to small business startups and local people.
Any further questions for the officer? No. We'll move into debate. And Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to start with a comment. Well, something has been written in this fairly long discussion about this application, where somebody is either new to the Planning Committee or has no knowledge at all of Norton-on-Derwent, which is actually its proper name. They would just say it's Norton, but the Town Council would be very, uptight if they thought it was not Norton-on-Derwent. The fact is that somebody has described Norton as Norton Village. Now, bearing in mind that Norton is actually larger than Moulton, its nearest town, and has got more homes to it and so on, I really do feel that somebody either hasn't done his or her homework, or alternatively, you just go down the commercial street, which is pretty busy on the whole, and think, well, it just looks like a village. I'm not against villages, but I object to my particular town being called a village. So perhaps that could be corrected by whoever it is. I don't want to know, just find them out. Now, this application looks really quite straightforward, doesn't it? Twice already it has been applied for, different numbers, slightly different conditions and so on. And so at the moment we've got to the one that's in front of you. Nevertheless, 30 residents or so have written about it with their concerns, and those are all listed, and there's some 15 or 16 really genuine concerns there about this. Really, what concerns me to start off with is 27 units. Are there really, all that number of people wanting to come into Norton, at that part of Norton, which is right the furthest away from the rest of the town, at Westfield Way? And I'm, really wondering whether a lot of them might be thinking, well, are we in for Brexit or are we out of it? Nobody knows. And I expect a lot of people who are in business or thinking of going to Brexit, magic word, won't make a decision until we're past whatever date it is in March next year, and maybe later. So I do wonder whether so many going up at this time are not actually going to be sitting there doing nothing after a whole lot of work has been done with toing and froing, with all the materials that will have to come in and the noise and the dust that is going to accompany it all, in spite of the fact that there are lots of trees around there and there is a forest on the one side. But do we really need so many of these units? That's the first thing. The flooding area seems to have been dismissed quite quickly, and it's in the flood zone 2 and 3, isn't it? Not except for 1, which is only a small bit. But it can flood. We have had our other areas where we know they flood closer in the town, and I think perhaps the people who have got this application in should really be thinking about that. The access from the Scarborough Road, now it's a very busy road. Most of you must know this if you've even just tried to get out of Norton down the road. Extremely busy, and that's the only place that's going to come out onto the main road in either direction. I wonder, just how much that is going to affect the residents whose estate has grown up in the recent, very recent years, a very nice and very pleasant area, and with the wooded area behind makes it even sort of more pleasant. But I am concerned about it because I think it's going to be overdevelopment. you're going to have a whole lot of things which are going to sit there doing nothing, actually. We've had quite a number of inspections, site inspections, over the last few years, particularly in the last year or two. I seem to recall going two or three times around Pickering, as well as to other ones. I'm not denigrating those at all, because I enjoy going to a site inspection if I don't know the area. And what I'm going to do, in spite of the fact that the officers are supporting this for approval, I'm going to suggest that we do have a site inspection. I do not know how many of you are aware of where this is. It is right at the end of Norton. You go far on enough, you'll come to it. But the point is, I think that if you don't know, and you've just got papers in front of you, when you actually get to a site, it's a different matter. It's happened to me on one or two occasions when I thought that was all right, all the other way around, and then changed my mind. The town council has given its approval, and I must admit I do normally try and follow the town council's whatever they suggest. But they have made, and there is on page 118 for those of you who may have missed it, they say approval, but subject to a ban or restriction of parking on the main industrial estate road, especially at the point where the subject site access road meets the main road. That is going to be quite difficult, I think. And they suggest considering increasing the number of parking spaces on site as two per unit, as provided on the plan, appears quite restrictive. The turning, they're also worried about turning areas for larger vehicles, as the road corners and junctions are quite narrow on the plan. Well, there is a difficulty, I think, at that corner. So, whilst I know this has been approved in the past and generally for this, I still would like people to go and have a look and see whether, you know, they're happy with it and just what's going to be involved, because I don't think it's whatever they build is going to be taken up immediately. I would be absolutely staggered if it were. Right, thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak on the application? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I hadn't originally intended to speak on this one, but I do know where the site is. Employment is important. I mean, obviously, we've got to build houses because we've been told we've got to build houses, but employment is absolutely vital to any area, and it is so important that we provide that employment. Now, I'm aware this is a speculative build, so there's obviously no guarantee that it's going to be filled, but I would like to think that the applicant wouldn't have put in for it unless they thought there was a very high probability. And as Gary said, this is the sort of development that will allow smaller companies to move in and then hopefully expand and move to something bigger. So we've got to provide this employment. This piece of land has been assessed as suitable for employment. It's got about as good access for Norton people as could be possible. And as we spent a fortune on Brambling Fields, it's got even better access for people who are not from Norton without going through the town and creating more air pollution. So I see very few drawbacks from this site and about as good an application as is possible. I did look very carefully at the flood risk, and I actually did question the IDB because I thought that the runoff rate was a bit too high, considering it should be 1.4 litres per second per hectare, which I actually did the sums on, and it should be 1.82 litres overall. But I was quite satisfied with the response from the IDB saying that on a smaller site it wasn't quite so critical because you end up with an outflow pipe so small that there's a risk of it being blocked. So I satisfied, sorry about the detail there, but I satisfied myself about the flood risk. One thing that perhaps isn't mentioned is not only the flood risk on the site itself, which I'm quite satisfied has been dealt with by the, there was one particular unit that needed the ground raising. It's my concern, as much as that, is the downstream flood risk from the runoff, which I am happy that that's been dealt with through the conditions from the lead local flood authority and the IDB. So on that basis, I'm quite happy to move approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else? Councillor Burr.
Just before that approval is seconded, am I okay to speak? Oh, sorry, I thought you were... just before that is seconded, we usually have a protocol to listen to ward members, and there probably is or isn't an appetite to have a site visit, but I would like to give it an opportunity to have a vote. So I'll I know where it is, but I'll give the other members an opportunity to have a site visit, and if it's voted down, then obviously we can go into the debate. So I'd like to put that forward first, and then we can go into debate whether it's lost or won. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. I do apologise. We will take a vote now on whether to have a site visit or not, please. That's 5-5, so Chairman's casting vote on this occasion. I'm very sorry, but I don't think we actually need to have a site visit. So that's been lost. So I have a mover for the approval of the officer recommendation. Does anybody else wish to speak on the application, or Councillor Cleary?
I merely wish to second the motion.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded, so I will put that to the vote. Thank you. The application has been approved. We'll now move on to agenda item 8, which is application at Ravenswick Swineherd Lane, Kevin Moorside. I think we're moving on to Alan now.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 8 relates to a planning application for the erection of outbuildings, a walled kitchen garden, formation of lakes, the erection of 3 bridges, formation of a fenced deer park, wider landscaping, including the spreading of the excavated spoil on adjacent land at Ravenswick Hall. The application is reported to committee as a major planning application. There are no objections from any consultees or members of the public. I'll just run through a number of slides. First of all, an aerial photo showing the wider site. The application site in this case amounts to 42 hectares. The wider site amounts to 76 hectares. Sorry. Up at the northern end is the is the Ravenswick Hall Country House, which is currently under construction. And also further to the north are stables and staff cottages which benefit from planning permission and also are under construction. The River Dove runs on the eastern side of the site and meanders down towards the south. The southern part of the application site is within flood zones 2 and 3. In terms of the development that's proposed under this application, to the west of the Ravenswick Hall is the position of what the Palm House and the walled kitchen garden. That is shown on the aerial photo, which is a few years, which is out of date. It's actually currently the contractor's car park for the staff on site. Further south is the field has been shown that would receive the material that's been excavated to form the lakes. Now, the main lake is the boating lake at the southern end of the site, to the east of which there would be a boathouse, and further to the north there would be five moon lakes would be created. I've also shown the positions of the three bridges that would be installed across the River Dove. The one in the centre would be the main vehicular access to the boating lake to the south. This slide shows an artist's impression of the main buildings and structures that form part of the application. At the top of that slide is the Palm House, predominantly a glazed building. That's the south-facing elevation that would face across the deer park. At the bottom left-hand corner is the boathouse, and on the right-hand side is the main bridge. So moving on to photos of the site, this is the country house that is currently being constructed. A number of planning conditions have been discharged, and as you can see, it's progressing at a pace. This is showing the area where the palm house and the wall garden would be constructed. This is currently the contractors and visitors car park. Another photo, this is just facing roughly southward past the car park. There is a condition on the as part of the recommendation that would deal with the construction traffic and management of contractors parking, and it would allow for the approval of a relocated parking area should the palm house and kitchen garden come forward. This is at the southern end of the site. This is the field where the moon lakes would be excavated. And this is the looking south towards the across the field where the main boating lake would be constructed. Again, this is just moving further round to the south and to the southwest. This photo shows the existing bridge, which would be reconstructed as shown on the artist impression earlier. This would be the main vehicular access to the southern part of the site. This photo is facing southward towards the field where the spoil would be redistributed. It would follow the existing topography, distributed to a maximum of half a metre. And it's not stated in the report, but the applicant has confirmed that they estimate there'd be 47,000 cubic metres of spoil that would be deposited in this area. Again, that's just a further round to the south facing across that field. So moving to the report as published, there's just one update which is contained within the late observations on page 135 of the late observations, and that's just the Kirby Moorside Town Council confirming no comments on the application. In terms of the main considerations and the design and visual impact, it's considered that the buildings and structures will be sympathetic to the setting of the locally valued landscape, and they would be constructed from traditional materials and of an appropriate scale and design that would complement the parkland estate. The site is relatively remote and well screened by existing and proposed planting. There are limited views across the site, and it would not create any visual intrusion in the local landscape. There would be no major landscape character change arising from the spoil being spread in the adjacent field, as that would follow the existing topography, and there are conditions that are proposed that would ensure that a good standard of restoration of that field. Other conditions would control the construction materials for the structures and buildings, the final surface finishes for the access roads and footpaths, and also the landscaping and soil handling conditions. As stated, the southern end of the site falls within flood zones 2 and 3 at the highest risk of flooding. The application is accompanied by a flood risk assessment, which confirms that there would be no increase in land levels in this part of the site. There would also be a condition attached to the permission that would ensure that there would be no storage of materials in this area. The main boating lake would be, the level of the water within that lake would be retained at half a metre below the adjacent land. This would actually increase the flood storage capacity on the site. With regard to biodiversity, it's acknowledged that the spreading of spoil across the adjacent field, the planting at the lake margins, and the works to create crossings over the River Dove provides an opportunity to enhance and conserve biodiversity in the area. In light of this, there's been a condition proposed that would secure a biodiversity enhancement management plan, and that's been included in the recommendation. In conclusion, it's considered that the proposed development would introduce additional traditional features that complement the Parkland estate and would complete the country house development. The proposed development would not undermine the character of the area or the appearance of the open countryside and the locally valued landscape. It's considered that it can be accommodated without resulting in a materially adverse impact on flood risk management in the locality. In light of this, it's recommended that planning permission is granted subject to the 18 conditions as listed on the report.
Thank you, Alan. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. As usual, it's probably a bit too late to be asking this question, but it's just occurred to me that if there is a fairly substantial sized lake with the level intended to be kept half a metre below the level of the top, I don't know what the outflow of the lake is, how it's formed, but there is a possibility there that if the outflow was designed in the right way, that lake could actually hold quite a significant amount of water, or should I say attenuate a significant amount of water temporarily in the case of flood conditions. Is that a possibility for going forward, do you think? Do you understand the theory of attenuating the flows in that way? Because that way, if you've got a particularly high flow, the lake could actually raise up and overtop, but then gradually go down later on as the as storm conditions pass by.
In terms of the current proposal, that isn't the intention, but the storage capacity would be increased through the lake, and that's set out in the flood risk assessment. I don't know the outflow rates off. I haven't got that to hand, but there would be a condition that would require it to be constructed in accordance with the flood risk assessment. As it stands, there isn't any other conditions that would require the applicant to revisit the design of the lake as it stands.
Are there any further questions for the officer? No. We shall move into debate. Councillor Windrus lives closest, I believe, to the site, so we'll let you
Thank you,
that.
Madam Chairman. Yes, it all sounds wonderful to me. I'm sure it'll look wonderful when it's completed, and I do hope that perhaps the Planning Committee may get a visit at some point to see what it does look like. I have no problem moving approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Burr.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Some time ago, members will remember that the last time that we had sight of the application, we saw some very, very sad photographs of the property as it was then in the state of repair. And it was very, very sad because obviously it had been a grand house, a grand small estate, and so disappointing to see the house really being vandalised. However, we were faced with this wonderful renovation project, and someone who wanted to put the heart back into this building and obviously invest in Rydale, and obviously wanted to restore it back to its wonderful grandeur. And why wouldn't someone want to plough all that money into wonderful Rydale? So we were delighted with that, and obviously it was passed.
And now we're being asked about palm houses, outbuildings, lakes, etc., etc. It just sounds so idyllic. It's out of this world. It's wonderful. But why not? Why not in Rydale? And it certainly is something very different that we're used to dealing with than, you know, housing estates, etc., etc. So it's wonderful, again, to see someone investing and hopefully creating jobs for this area. So, very, very happy to second this. And I'm not so sure about the invite, but, yeah, very, very happy to second it.
Anyone else wishing to speak? No, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I shall put that to the vote. That has been approved. We'll now move on to agenda item 9, which is application at Land off Piercy End, Kirby Moorside. Is that Alan again? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Item number 9 relates to a planned application for the erection of a veterinary surgery with associated parking and turning areas at Land off Piercy End, Kirby Moorside. Just run through a number of slides of the application site as it stands. First of all, I've got the aerial photo which shows the site centrally on this photo. On the eastern side, you can see the properties of Weybridge Close, which at the time of the aerial photo are in the process of being constructed. There are actually 21 dwellings adjacent to the proposed application site. The application site amounts to 0.664 hectares, and the red line boundary looks to develop approximately 30% of the land, which is shown in that aerial photo, to the west of Weybridge Close. Just the main points to pick up on this aerial photo is the roundabout access to the northwest. This is the access which, as part of previous permissions for the housing and a supermarket development, has been conditioned to be closed off and restored without access into the site. I've also shown the approximate position of the new veterinary surgery in the northwest corner of the application site. On the western boundary, parallel to Ings Lane, there are a number of TPO protected trees. And then to the north, there is the A170 New Road, which bounds that side of the application site. This photo is looking into the site, facing approximately southeast. The boundary treatment is a 1.8 metre high palisade fence. Initially, it was proposed for this to be retained, although a condition would be included to revisit the boundary treatments to potentially soften the appearance of the site. This is the most visible part of the site for those who are travelling away from the town centre southward. This is a photo taken at the entrance to Weybridge Close, facing west, just showing the visibility splays. And this is facing east. This photo is looking up into the residential area. The width of the highway in this area is 5.5 metres. And this is facing west to the point where the new access would be created. It would involve the removal of the temporary screen barriers, which are 2.9 metres high, which are visible on that photo. And this photo is just facing out from Weybridge Close, north in a north direction, just showing the sort of the grass verge standoff from the boundary. This photo is taken within the site, facing southward. On the right-hand side of that photo are the trees that are protected by TPO, and there is some chestnut paling fencing that does protect the root protection zone, although a condition would be attached to ensure that that's maintained and, where necessary, improved. It's obvious from the photos of the site that all previous development, it was previously operated by Russell's Agricultural Engineers, and obviously a long time ago was part of the railway. All buildings on site have been removed. This is facing, on that photo you can see the nearest property on Weybridge Close, which would be adjacent to the access point. This is facing out towards the roundabout. In the background you can just make out Rydale Garages and one of the car showrooms to the northwest. Obviously you can see that there are vehicles on site at present. As stated in the report, the Highways Authority have confirmed that during the construction period they would be happy for construction vehicles to use this access to reduce the impact on the nearby residents. And this photo is facing east, just showing the screen boards that are currently in place. Obviously these would be pulled back as part of the development, but there would be a condition that would allow us to secure appropriate screening of the site. And this is facing southward, just showing the boundary planting that's in situ and would remain. This photo is taken from the bridge on Ings Lane to the west or southwest corner of the site, just showing the proximity of the residential properties on Weybridge Close. And finally, this is just moved around further towards the south, again showing the boundary planting along that side. And you can just see the west gable end of the nearest property to the access point on Weybridge Close. So moving to the report, there's no updates to the report as published. There are objections from four local residents on Weybridge Close. The main concerns are the access, highway safety and the general amenity of the application site and the adjoining land under the control of the applicant. With regard to the design of the building, it's acknowledged that it's a two-storey building that would have a modern and functional appearance. The frontage, the main entrance, would be on the northern side of the building and would be predominantly a glazed frontage with cedar cladding just to soften the appearance from the most visible part of the site. The external construction materials would contrast with the adjacent buildings, which are predominantly brick, and there would also be similarities with the modern car showroom buildings to the north. With regard to the landscape impact, the TPO trees would continue to be protected, and there would be a wider landscaping scheme for the boundary of the proposed development site. It's considered that the scale and appearance of the building would not be detrimental to the character of the area. With regard to the impact on local amenity, the main concern is the visual appearance of the application site and the adjoining land under the applicant's control. As it stands, as stated in the report, there are no plans for the adjacent land. The permissions that were granted for housing and for a supermarket have lapsed, so there is a possibility that the applicant could come forward with a scheme for the adjacent land. However, they have confirmed that they would, as part of this current development, with the access leading through Weybridge Close, they would wish to create a welcoming aesthetic for visitors to the veterinary practice. With regard to other impacts on amenity, the hours of opening and operation would be limited by condition. It is acknowledged that there would be the need for emergency appointments outside of those hours, so they have been allowed for, but it's considered that they would be in the minority in terms of the visits. The means of enclosure would also be covered by a planning condition that would deal with the temporary screens and also the permanent boundary treatment. It's considered that the palisade fencing is industrial in appearance and would use that condition to revisit an appropriate boundary treatment with the applicant. The main concern is in relation to the highway's impact and the appropriateness of the proposed access. The application originally came forward with the access proposed off the roundabout. The highways officers objected to that scheme and referred to the previous permissions that require that access to be closed and restored. The technical reasons for that are set out in the report and relate to the visibility and the approach and the fact that it would form a fifth arm of the roundabout. It's also relevant to note that the levels of traffic have increased since that access was created and last used. The access as it stands is proposed through the Weybridge close access. It hasn't been designed solely for residential use. The highways officers have confirmed that it is a suitable width and would allow for safe manoeuvring of vehicles that would use the veterinary surgery. In light of this, it's not anticipated that there would be a conflict between users and the construction traffic can use the roundabout access provided that signage is in place prior to its use. In conclusion, there are no objections to the principle of the development as a veterinary surgery from any consultees or members of the public. The proposed development would utilise redundant and derelict land, previously developed lands, on the edge of the centre of town, and the new use would enhance facilities available and support the vitality of the town centre whilst providing employment. The development would not create adverse highway safety conditions, and associated traffic can be accommodated within the local highway network. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted, subject to the 15 conditions as listed at the end of the report.
Thank you. We do have a speaker on this application, which is an objector, Mrs. Adams.
Hello. I am speaking on behalf of the residents of Weybridge Close, Kirby Moorside. These are the three points we wish to raise. Point one, we have no objection to the site being developed by Grace Lane Veterinary Practice, a local successful business, a local employer. Point 2A, we object to the proposed access to the site via Weybridge Close on the grounds of increased traffic flow in a small cul-de-sac residential estate where there are a significant number of families with young children. Many of the customers visiting the vets will be driving horse transporter wagons, large 4x4 vehicles with horse boxes and trailers for livestock. This will undoubtedly present potential safety hazards and accidents waiting to happen. Point 2B. The preferred access to the site, as submitted originally, is from the roundabout through the existing entranceway that was used for decades by the now closed Russell's Farm Machinery suppliers. However, this has been rejected by the Highways Authority. The Highways have stated that it does not conform to Department of Transport requirements in layout, deflection and visibility leading to road user conflict. Even though the roundabout and Ings Lane had an upgrade of just under £500,000 last year to improve the flow of traffic and conditions for commercial and heavy goods vehicles. It is interesting to note that these recent works to the roundabout necessitated frequent usage to the site via the current entrance exit of the roundabout, where there were lots of HGVs and contractor vehicles coming and going for over a week, and this did not seem to present the Highways Department and their contractors any problem or conflict with the Department of Transport standards. We have also learned today that Kirby Moorside Town Mayor Angus Ashworth had no knowledge of the change to the original plans of moving the entrance way from the roundabout and through Weybridge Close, and thus gave no objections at last week's Town Council meeting, a change he was quite shocked to hear about today. An alternative suggestion regarding the site entrance could be to create a separate access directly off the A170 midway between Weybridge Close and the roundabout.
30 seconds left.
This would avoid any additional traffic using the narrow residential road within our estate and would not change the existing configuration of the roundabout. Point three, finally, we would request clarification that approval is given to the scheme that all the conditions outlined in Mr. Goforth's email dated 13th of September 2018, which states that Grace Lane Vets intend to create a pleasant visitor experience and not just a vehicular access that feels like customers will be driving through a part-built construction site, and that the wider site will be maintained, create a welcoming aesthetic for visitors. Could we also request a site meeting for all the involved parties? Thank you for hearing my views. Sorry.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, just a couple of points in terms of the highway's impact. It's important to note that the design of Weybridge Close and what's on the ground at the moment did form part of the original housing developments. There was at one point the entire site was due to be developed for housing. More recently, there was the permission for the supermarket. In both occasions, the roundabout wasn't considered suitable. And that access point has been designed to accommodate increased traffic. In terms of the types of vehicles, it's acknowledged that there would be obviously a difference between the types of vehicles if it was a residential development, but the larger vehicles would be trailers or 4x4s, horse boxes potentially, but they're in the minority. And in terms of the route taken to access the site, they would pass approximately six of the properties on the western edge of the existing residential area, so it wouldn't actually pass through the residential area. And also in terms of the total movements of vehicles, due to the nature of the development, there's a limit on what's possible in terms of appointments through the day. The applicant has estimated that it would involve 100 movements, of which 80 would be associated with appointments. So it does differ from supermarket development, for example, where there wouldn't be any control over the numbers of vehicle movements, so it is limited to that extent. I think that's my comment.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Looking? No? Lovely. We shall move into debate. Councillor Windrus, are you happy to take this one?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think this application will be a wonderful addition for Kirby Moorside. The site has been derelict for a number of years. It was going to be houses, then a Tesco, using the Weybridge Close Junction. So this application has got to be better for the residents of Weybridge Close than a supermarket. So I'm quite happy to move approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Is anybody else? Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I do think that it's going to be a really, really good place for the veterinary surgery to expand. And I think it's like you, it's long overdue that we need something on there. But it does concern me, as someone who uses vets quite a lot, it does concern me about vehicles, large vehicles, trailers or horse boxes. And when you look at the plan on 201, you do actually think, I wonder why that's been done. Now, this committee has often disagreed with highways. We often say that we think they're wrong, but we get told that we're wrong and they're right. So we often, as a committee, think we know like what residents want, and we're told that, you know, we're wrong. We're not the professionals. However, it may be prudent of you, and I'm not on this committee, so I'm subbing tonight, for you to go and have a look at it if you don't know it. But, you know, just think about, obviously, that is quite a young housing estate. Well, it's a mixture, actually. And if there was a better way to get those vehicles in, maybe we should look at it, and then hand on heart, we can think, well, we did our best. But I fear if you go for a site visit, I will move it might not be supported, probably Highways will come back and say, we're the professionals and you ain't. So you have what we give you. So we do try to listen to residents, and I think we should look at it. But as I said, that's the problem that we've got on a planning committee. So I will move a site visit, as I say, and then good luck with it, because I won't be here.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. It's going to be it's going to be a very useful employment opportunity. It's going to provide very useful animal facilities. However, you know, I've read all the papers and I've looked at the floor plan, and I can't see this particular enterprise even looking at dealing with horses. So I'm not quite sure why everybody thinks horse boxes are going to go in and out, because there just isn't the facility, as far as I can see from this, to do equine veterinary work. And maybe officers could perhaps come back and tell me. And turning to the access point, you know, we're talking about a lot less visits on this road, this highway, than was ever envisaged when it was a supermarket. And, in fact, if it had been housing, we'd have had a lot more cars going in and out. So I'm not going to support, I know Lindsay will be very disappointed, but I'm not going to support a site visit. And actually, I'm very happy with the proposals that have come forward.
Can I take from that, Councillor Goodrick, that you're happy to second the recommendation? Thank you.
Chair, I'll second.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. I'd like to think that at some point in time that the rest of the site would be developed as housing, and because it's the ideal site for housing, in which case it does strike me that it's ludicrous having an access coming off Weybridge Close, which would be there for any housing development. And I have to agree that I find it just completely baffling and ludicrous that there can't be an access off a roundabout, where the whole point of a roundabout is to allow that sort of flow of traffic. But unfortunately, it would appear that we're stymied once again by the far more learned opinion of the highways. But yes, I can certainly support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Potter. Just for clarity, and I'm sure Gary will stop me if I'm incorrect, is that the previous applications for housing and for the Tesco site were to come off the Weybridge Close. It was never intended, and never has been intended, to use that access in any of the applications going forward that have been previously approved.
Chairman, that is the case, and in fact the development goes back to around about 2007-08, I think, when we first dealt with the 46 dwellings, which was a Barrett David Wilson home, 47, okay. But the rationale here is, and we're dealing with an A road here, so there are particular peculiarities about accesses onto A roads and vehicle safety. And put bluntly, there's a correlation between increased number of accesses and accidents on the A road. That's really what it comes down to. Also, in terms of the roundabout design, anything which of that size of roundabout is more than four junctions off the roundabout is suboptimal in terms of the actual capacity and manoeuvring on the roundabout. So highways have always taken the view that the redevelopment of this site, the bigger site, part of which is now developed, should have involved the closure of the roundabout and then just one access point onto the A170 of a design that was appropriate to initially serve 40 plus dwellings, but then was considered to be appropriate to serve 20 odd dwellings plus what was, in Kirby Moorside terms, a relatively big shop, and that was also to accommodate HGVs with deliveries at whatever hours they would be coming. So in highway safety terms, what you're looking at there is essentially what was looked at, you know, on at least two occasions on two previous planning permissions. So the Highway Authority have been consistent across the year.
Thank you. Is anybody else wishing to speak? No, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I shall put that to the vote.
The application has been approved. Now move on to agenda item 10, application at 32 Bongate, Helmsley. Alan.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, item 10, plan application for a two-storey extension to the rear of the property. The application had been subject to one objection from the neighbour. Although, as included in the late observation papers at page 137, that objection has been withdrawn and is now in support of the application. I've prepared a number of slides in a presentation which I'm happy to run through if members wish.
Would members wish to see them, or are we happy to go straight to questions? Oh, beg your pardon, we've got a speaker. Beg your pardon, I'm jumping ahead of myself. Shall we go straight to the speaker? Yeah. We'll go straight to the speaker. And that is the applicant, Philippa Jord? Agent, beg your pardon. It's okay. Well, do come and take a... You'll most probably want to, you've been very patient.
Very briefly, I'm the agent for Mr. Simon Gospel of 32 Bongate, Helmsley, and as I own 34 Bongate, which has a damp problem that will only be cured when the extension on 32 Bongate is built. And until that time, I can't live in my house, so myself and my baby son are living at my retired parents. And that's why I'm the agent, basically. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer or Councillor Potter?
Yeah, thank you. I just happened to notice that in condition 5 it says about hours of demolition and construction work being limited to 0800 to 1700 Monday to Friday and 8 till 1 on Saturdays. And I'm mindful that every builder that I know works from 7:30 till 4:30. So is there a specific reason for this, or would it be acceptable to change it to 7:30?
Yes, the inclusion of the condition was to address the, in the objection there was I think a request for it to be between 8 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon for construction, so we sort of looked to gauge sort of fairly standard working hours in the interest of amenity. So
yeah, well, assuming that the applicant is happy with that, I'm quite happy to leave that as it is.
Any further questions? We shall move into debate. And Councillor Windrus, you are the ward member.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm happy to approve this, and I'm sure the neighbours who did object at start would just like the applicant to get on with it. Thank you.
Councillor Burr.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to second it, but also I'd like to thank our officer for two very, very good reports. I think that you presented yourself really professionally tonight, and I'd just like to say from the committee thank you very much. And it's nice to see our team expanding. Thank you.
Thank you for those kind words, Councillor Burr. So it has been moved and seconded for approval, so we shall put that to the vote. Thank you. That has been approved. We're moving on to agenda item 11, which is the proposed acquisition and disposal of land for planning purposes. Land at Rickle Drive, Helmsley. Anthony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members have before them a detailed report relating to something that this council, to my knowledge, has not done in its life since the start of its life since 1974. So it's something quite unique to planning, and it's of great interest, I think, generally speaking. The members of this committee may well recall that planning permission was granted in May of this year for residential development at Rickall Drive and Helmsley. And there was some background to that, in the sense that the Helmsley plan was approved on the basis that the district council had to use its compulsory purchase powers to satisfy the inspector at the examination in public that land would actually be brought forward for residential development. So we do have a compulsory purchase order in place, confirmed by the Secretary of State, and that is available to ensure that the housing site is can be used for development. However, there is just one piece of the jigsaw that we need to just tidy up, and that's the question of the open space which is required for the development. And by an oversight, the compulsory purchase order area doesn't cover this open space. The open space is subject to covenant, and this committee is being asked to use its planning powers to acquire this open space land and dispose of it to the developer so that it becomes available for finishing the development. The justification for it is that acquisition of the open space will facilitate the carrying out of the development, which will contribute to the achievement and improvement of the economic well-being of the part of the district. And that is justified through the provision of housing, including 16 affordable housing units. And also, it contributes to the environmental and social well-being of the district. For example, through the provision of public open space, productive use of an unused site, and the significant improvement to the character and appearance of this part of Helmsley, because at the moment the land is unused and the appearance can be enhanced. So one question that can be raised is, what's the risk to the council and the planning committee of making this decision? Well, the answer to that is that because the development is in the interest of the owner and the developer, the district council can seek an indemnity in respect of compensation that's claimed for the covenant, because essentially the rights are not lost here. Rights are transferred from the land to a right to compensation, which can be dealt with. And the members of the planning committee are asked to refer to paragraph 3.1 of the report before members, which includes the recommendation to members, which this committee is asked to pass. And the outcome of proceeding with this proposal is essentially to ensure that much-needed housing and affordable housing is secured, which is a planning purpose for this planning committee. Members are asked to consider approving the officer recommendation at paragraph 3.1 of the report. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Burr.
Thank you very much for that appraisal. I was with you for the first sort of few minutes, I got it, and then I sort of drifted off because I just wasn't sure. So I suppose if I could maybe ask Gary to maybe just tell us in sort of planning nuts and bolts, because your appraisal was absolutely excellent, Anthony, but I just didn't understand it. I'm really sorry. So maybe Gary could say, we need this, we need that. That'll make that happen. And that's how... Is it an oversight or is it just something that slipped through? Or I know I'm being silly, but I just don't understand it.
In all seriousness, if members look at page 237, which sort of puts all of this in context, we have the black line of what was the application site there for 46 dwellings, I think it was, in total, something of that order. And as Anthony's mentioned, I think 16 of those were going to be affordable housing. The applicant is Yorkshire Housing, but acting as a developer, they bought or intended to buy the whole site and develop it as a developer would, but providing, I think it's 16 units of affordable housing. The application site that they'd submitted showed a small area of public open space, which is denoted by the black mark on page 237. And that, in addition to providing footpath links across the Beck towards the public right-of-way that exists on the eastern side of the development, was considered by as part and parcel of that application when it came to members a few months ago now. It might even have been early part of this year or last year. So there is a planning permission. There is a planning permission. And in essence, most of the site, crikey, how many percent of it, is covered by the compulsory purchase order, apart from the little black bit. So that's what this report is seeking authority to proceed, but on the basis of an indemnity insurance. That's it, really, to minimise risk.
Thank you, Gary. I get that, but obviously I wasn't present at the other meeting. So I'm just on the hoof a little bit. So thank you. I understand that.
I think the essence of this is that it still seeks to provide a development which has a modicum of open space on it rather than not, if that makes sense.
I think Anthony just wanted to come back on something.
Could I just come back to make one basic point that I would have appreciated making earlier? There's no criticism of any party here. There's no criticism of the current owners or anyone or the estate or anyone. It's just one of those things that sometimes agreements can't be reached for whatever reason, and this is a mechanism for just speeding things along, resolving the deadlock to make sure that housing and affordable housing is provided. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you. Chair, I'm still not 100% clear, because what I'm seeing is a plot of land that we're compulsorily purchasing from somebody to pass it over to the developers, and I'm thinking, if everybody's in agreement, why doesn't the developers buy it from whoever owns it now? Is there a particular reason for that?
Madam Chairman, that is exactly the normal way of proceeding, that there's agreement between the parties. For whatever reason, historically, there hasn't been agreement between the parties, and that's had quite a chilling effect on the ability of the parties to bring this site forward, these sites forward, for housing development. And given how important housing development and affordable housing is, the legislation does, in exceptional circumstances, empower local planning authorities to just speed things up and get housing and affordable housing sorted out. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Just remind members of was that the CPO that we went through also provided for access to land further south, which was part of the only employment land that was identified as being available through the Helmsley plan process. So the CPO wasn't just about residential, actually. It was also about the employment land allocation in the town, because there was on our side, because this was a joint document produced with the National Park, there was no employment land. So the inspector was as much worried about that as he was about the residential bits of our part of it. But Anthony is correct in the sense that in our part of the district, we produced very little in Helmsley for some considerable time. And Yorkshire Housing seem keen to get on and take advantage of the CPO process.
Councillor Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Right, so let me just make sure that I've got this right in my head. We've compulsory purchased the plot of land except the black bit. We're going to sell that to Yorkshire Housing to put affordable housing and ordinary housing on, I assume, market-led housing. But we can't compulsory, or they can't buy the public open space bit. We've got to buy it as an intermediary. Who's indemnifying us?
Madam Chairman, the arrangement is...
Sorry?
It will be the owner of the land that will indemnify the District Council. So those are the safeguards will be in place to ensure that does happen. And that is not exceptional when these powers are used. The London Borough Councils use these powers quite a bit. And there's always an indemnity for the local planning, for the council to make sure that it doesn't lose out. So it's nothing exceptional when these powers are used.
Councillor Bird, do you have another question?
I did, but that's been asked. It was about indemnity, so thank you, Councillor Goodrick, as long as I'm clear on that.
Mr. Howson, did you want to add something?
I was just drawing members' attention to the recommendation was seeking authority for the solicitor of the council in consultation with the chairman of committee when we've got that detail in more order. But we needed to go through this process. It's not a regular occurrence, as Anthony's just said, and it's one of those things that we need just to tidy it up and make progress.
Three-man with a recommendation is 8 lines long without a single comma or a full stop in it.
Oh, that's simply shocking.
Your grammar is appalling.
Well pointed out, Councillor Shields.
Is your training need, Mrs. Shields?
We shall have words.
There isn't one comma.
There isn't one comma. Oh, I do apologise.
It's still on blue by the time you've read it out loud.
Stop. Right. Putting the English aside, we shall... Ward member, Councillor Windrus.
Move the recommendation, Madam Chairman. Thank you.
Councillor Burr.
Second that. Thank you.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded for approval, so we'll put that to the vote. Thank you. That has been approved. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 12, which is Council Procedure Rule 32, an item for Planning Committee agenda at the request of Councillor Paul Andrews. At this point, I would like to thank Councillor Paul Andrews for his report. Unfortunately, he can't be with us this evening, which is to be noted, and I would like to move that it is noted from the Chair, please. Do we have a... Councillor Windrus?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll second that.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded that the report be noted. Can I put that to the vote, please? Thank you. That has been approved to be noted. Agenda item 13 is any other business of which I have none.
Agenda item 14 is list of applications determined under delegated powers. There are some quite interesting applications on there. I hope you've all had a look, or do have a look. And we'll move on to agenda item 15, which are the appeals, which I think Gary would just like to touch upon.
Yes, Chairman. So there's three decisions, but four appeals there, so it's four appeal decisions in total. The first two, which are on page 250, and then the last one, were pretty much straightforward down-the-line policy decisions on development outside of development limits, where the inspector, it's the same inspector on all of the decisions, took a very hard line on that, and they were straight down-the-line sort of policy decisions, which were good to see, but sometimes you fret a little in certain circumstances. The second of the decisions is the one that continues to perplex us, which is another appeal decision relating to a proposal for the conversion of a farm building to a dwelling. It's under that part of the permitted development process. But on this occasion, we really are scratching our heads in the sense that the building in question hasn't had a roof for some considerable time. And to a lot of people's judgment, we'll probably not have been meeting the regulations or the procedure. So I think Anthony had been asked for a view on that, and I think we sort of were scratching our heads as to whether it was almost verging on challengeable. But I think we took the view that because there's such a disparity of the way the inspectors across the land are dealing with these appeals, we could have had another inspector come along and make a totally different decision because there wasn't a complete building to work from. To some extent, I wish I'd got the photographs of the building because it was basically not even four complete walls, but it was without the roof, and you have to be within certain limitations to actually convert. And obviously any conversion has an amount of new building, but this we thought was, it had gone beyond the realms of what this category could deal with. But a little perplexing, really. We did, yes, yeah. Another one where if you considered planning by appeal decisions, I think we'd be making a lot of other decisions we wouldn't have made, and we'd get another 9 or 10 inspectors. You know, you'd show them the same thing and get a different outcome. It was a really poor decision, I think. But as he dismissed the other three, I probably thought, well, let him off.
Lovely. Thank you all for attending this evening and for your input, and for officers' attendance too. We'll close the meeting and wish you all a safe journey home. Thank you.